Amen. All right. Part of setting in order the things that are wanting are listed in the second and third chapter. I think Paul kind of summarized this as in verse 14 of chapter 2, that he gave himself for us that he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself his own special people, zealous for good works. And we spent about 6 weeks talking about the good works that the church was involved in, but we didn't spend a lot of time on the individual works that are to be done. And chapter 2 really deals with that, the individual responsibilities that we have as Christians. Now, the scriptures spend a lot of time on the church and how the church is to work, operate, worship, organization, things like that. And the scriptures also deal a lot with the family. As far as the individual relationships between brethren, we know we're supposed to be hospitable, right? Given to hospitality, and that's a qualification of the elders, but it's also in 1 Peter chapter, I think chapter 3 or 4, for the individual members as well. But this particular chapter talks about the reputations that we should have. Now, when are we going to get these reputations? When are we going to know that an older man, say in verse 2, is sober and reverent and temperate and sound in faith and love and in patience? Now, you can see it a little bit in the church building, right? How would you see it in the church building when we're gathered together as a church? Virgil?
In the way that an older man would conduct himself. In the dignity and as the moment that is being considered. Younger men, many times, don't portray that. There's a saying, and I don't know, this is just that statesmanship is dead in this country anymore. And statesmanship is something that older men should be able to adhere to. Secondly, older people ought to be able to portray an example based upon what the scriptures teach how their character should be.
Right.
They put aside childish things. They've grown out of that.
Yep, that's right. And how do you know if somebody's done that or not? Now, you can see it in a preacher, because a preacher's up there talking all the time, and you get a pretty good sense of his wisdom and his the way he conducts his life. But what about the rest of us? What about those of us who aren't leading in public prayer and maybe aren't doing song leading? How will we know whether that individual has these qualities? Kelly?
Well, it's just like when we talk about qualification of elders, you're not going to be able to see everything that they do and how they conduct themselves just in the assembly. So you're going to have to spend some time with them outside of the assembly and get to know them a little bit better, and you see how they conduct, we've all heard of the Sunday morning Christian, right? But when they get outside the church building, their character and their behavior is a lot different than the way they act inside the church building.
And that's what I'm driving at. That's what I'm getting at. We have to spend time with each other. And unfortunately, we're going to spend a lot of time on that this morning in verse 3, where it says that the older women are to teach the younger women, and then it gives qualifications or qualities they're supposed to teach them. Now, when's this going to happen? See, is this happening at the church building? No, it's not happening. Is it happening at all? And this is an issue that my wife and I have talked a lot about over the years, because this is a hard thing to do. And I think I'll save that, because we need to go through the qualities of the younger, older women first. But then I want to spend a little bit of time on this as to why it is that I've never known a church. Have you ever known a church to actually set something like this up, where the elders say these older women are going to be teaching you younger women and we expect you to spend time with them? Would that be something elders could do?
Sure.
But do they do it? See, this is an aspect of the private lives of individual Christians, and it's been a little bit legislated. In other words, what if a congregation is not doing this? What if the older women are not doing this? What does that make that church? Kind of like if the church is not offering the Lord's Supper, what does that make the church?
Short.
Okay, at what point does it stop being a church of Christ? Yeah. Kelly?
When you look at, I know we're talking about the older women here, and every one of these qualifications requires the taking of ownership of that individual. Jennifer and I are older parents in our congregation. most of the parents that have kids our age are 10, 15 years younger than we are.
Right.
So even though our kids are about their age, I think we're kind of considered in some ways older people.
Yeah.
You know, and so while we may not be older as some of the other women who have grandchildren, if we were dealing with maybe a younger mother that we can help them with, we need to take that responsibility on. My
right.
wife has done that, where she will, you know, try to lovingly approach a younger sister and try to encourage her and show her from the scriptures a better way.
Right. And that'll be something we'll talk about here in a few minutes. Is this a work of the church, or is this an individual voluntary situation? Obviously, it's in the scriptures. So is this something that clearly, verse 2, the older men need to be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith and love and patience. These are things they bring with them into the local congregation. All right, let's go ahead and start in verse 3. When we get to verse 4, we're going to talk about this a little bit more. But it says the older women, likewise, that they be reverent in behavior. Now, you can't see it in English, but in verse 2, the older men are to be sober and what?
Reverent.
And then the older women are supposed to be what? Reverent. But they're totally different Greek words. And they have a totally different significance that we want to spend a little bit of time on this morning. Now, the term behavior, he doesn't give this in the men. The men, it's just sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, and patience. And, of course, how do we figure out if they have those qualities? It's by their behavior. But he actually says behavior in the third verse. So these are actions that the people need to be able to see. They need to be able to see her demeanor, her deportment, the way that she conducts herself in these areas. And, of course, again, they are the reverence and the fact that they don't slander, that they're not given to much wine, and that they are teachers of good things. So let's talk a little bit about this compound word. And unfortunately, when you have a word in the Bible, it's only used one time. How do you figure out what it means? Well, you go to the Koine Greek usage. Well, guess what? There's no usages of this word. They can't find any usages of it. So we're kind of in a little bit of a bind, except if you break the word apart. It's a compound Greek word, and there's two words involved, and those words are used in other places in the scripture. So the first part of the word, the root meaning of the word, is to stand out, to be conspicuous, and to be eminent. So as you look at that, what kind of a person is going to be conspicuous and standing out and eminent in something? So let's take singing. What would you need to be able to do so that people would say that person is an eminent song singer or stands out, conspicuous? What do you have to have?
You've got to be able to hear.
Probably need a good voice, right?
Yeah.
Probably need a good voice that you can really... And so eminence and preeminence are terms of what would you call it? They're words that are superlatives. And so this is Paul's putting, I guess what I'd say is he's highlighting it by using that part of the word. Kelly, had your hand up?
I had another comment about the behavior, but go ahead.
Oh.
I'll add that when you get
done. Okay. All right. Now, the second word is sacred. Now, the first one, and the one for the men, is also the same word that is used in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, where it says, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are honorable. And the word honorable there is the same word for reverent here. And it basically means that the individual is looking upward. Everything that he does, he's looking upward. That's what reverence is. In other words, before I make a decision, before I get involved in activity, I look to God first to see what he would want me to do. This word is sacred. Now, is there a difference between looking upward and sacred? Yeah, there's a little bit of a difference. This word is used twice in the New Testament. The first time it's used is in 2 Timothy 3 and verse 15, the sacred scriptures. Now, what's the difference between other writings and the sacred writings?
Inspired.
Okay, they're inspired. They're sacred because of their connection to the Holy Spirit and to God. The other time it's used is in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, where it says, those who minister at the altar, minister in sacred things. Now, what are the sacred things on the altar? Kelly?
Sanctified, those things that are set apart.
Okay, those things that are sanctified and set apart. And we used this illustration last week. When Nadab and Abihu offered profane or strange fire, what did God do because of their lack of keeping things sacred? Okay, they were put to death. So they were preeminently the wrong way, right? They were preeminently not manifesting a sacred attitude toward things. So now we put the two words together, and I'll just read you the definition. Becomes sacred person. That which becomes a sacred person. Now become meaning that which a sacred person would manifest. The other definition, beseeming a sacred place, a sacred person, or a sacred matter. Now, that's not very helpful. I spent a lot of time on this yesterday trying to figure it out, because it's really the hub of this situation that older women need to have. Now, what can an older woman do that would manifest that she is conspicuously sacred? She is conspicuously acting like this, with the same kind of qualities as the scriptures and the same kind of qualities as things on the altar. What would a woman have to do in order to manifest that? Kelly?
One of the first things that we that I see, you know, in a woman in general, and particularly an older woman, is how she dresses.
Okay.
How
clothing.
How does she clothe herself as one who professes godliness with good works?
Right. And so is there sacred clothing and immodest, ungodly clothing? Yeah, I think that we could easily make that point, that there's the apparel of a harlot in the book of Proverbs. Is that sacred? No. And then there is the, 1 Timothy 2, where it says that women should adorn themselves in what?
Modest
apparel. You say, well, what's modest apparel? Well, I think we can figure that one out. And the more sacred you are, the more modest you will be. And the more profane you are, the more immodest you're going to be. So, yeah, I think clothing is definitely one of those. I see another hand. Carl?
Not a gossip and a busybody in other men's matters.
Okay, yeah, and that's going to be dealt with in this actual passage where it talks about a slanderer. So what else? What else can a woman do to manifest that she is conspicuously sacred? She is manifesting herself as a sacred person. Jeannie?
Yes, some of the attributes, like the law of kindness, is always on her tongue. She uses, you would go to her if you wanted a wise answer. It specifies in behavior here. So it's going to be how she conducts herself. I've often thought older women are teaching the moment they walk into a room, just from how they are talking about their husbands, how they talk about their children, how they dress, just the whole package.
Right. Okay, that's right. Well, we're getting lots of hands now. I think Rob was first, and then Charles.
Just how they conduct themselves. And then I'm sure you're going to talk about this maybe a little later, but women that are professing these qualifications are going to take the lead in teaching. I mean, it doesn't just happen accidentally. There has to be purpose and admonishing a young person, for
okay.
instance.
All right. I hadn't thought about that, but that's actually an excellent point. It does say in this passage that they need to be teaching the younger women. So if a woman wants to manifest her sacredness, what's she going to be doing? She's going to be trying to teach those younger women. Now, part of the problem is some younger women don't want to be taught. What do you do then? It's kind of like evangelism. If nobody wants to hear the gospel, what do? So you try, but you know, if people don't want to hear the gospel, that doesn't mean you're not a good evangelist. And if they don't want to hear what you have to say, and that's been a problem. Some younger women already know everything. You met anybody like that? Yeah, there's people out there that are like that. Okay, Charles?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, Proverbs chapter 31, I think, kind of sums a lot of that from verse 10 all the way to verse 31.
Right? Okay, yeah.
That sums up a whole lot of what we're
Yeah, if God says this is what a virtuous, worthy woman is, if you want to manifest your sacredness, what would you do?
Read that.
You'd put those things into practice. George?
Well, I was going to refer to that same proverb, but also teaching is not totally standing up before one or more and holding a class or whatever. It's by behavior.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree that it does need to be, but you can't get everything through osmosis, right? You can't get everything just by being around somebody and showing them how you should live. Sometimes you have to be very pointed. Jennifer?
The Bible often talks about the countenance. You know, I think that sometimes you can tell in a person's countenance what their attitude is. You know, it talks about haughty eyes and things like that.
Right.
I think that what Jeannie was saying about how a woman just walks and handles herself says a lot about what kind of a woman she is.
Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, the modern interpretation of a powerful or a good woman is someone who's very sassy, who's very, you know, their idea of confidence is someone who always speaks her mind and who walks into a room and commands the room. But by her loudness and by her flashiness and things like that. And that's really not the godly example. A godly example is a woman who is demure, who is quiet, who is meek, but who does say what needs to be said when it needs to be said.
Right. Yeah. No, the reason I was smiling when you were talking is I was remembering that passage, I think it's in Hosea, where it talks about those women who are walking with mincing steps and haughty eyes and dingling and jangling as they go. And you think about some of the women today with all the jewelry and all the garishness and the immodesty. And you know, these women, let's say, and I never watch these things, but these events they have, awards that they have, you know, that's the American woman, but it's certainly not a godly woman. What about 1 Peter chapter 3? What is it that a woman needs to have that is precious in the sight of God? Kelly?
Yeah, I was about to refer to that passage.
Oh, okay.
Of a gentle and quiet spirit.
Okay.
Very precious in the sight of God.
The gentle, which is also the word meek, when Jesus said, blessed are the meek, and when Jesus said, I am meek and lowly, same Greek word as it's over there. It's just translated a little bit different. So if a woman wants to be conspicuous and preeminent, and even if God's the only one who sees it, then 1 Peter chapter 3 is critical. But how does she manifest that meek and quiet spirit? He goes on to say, as the women of old who did what to their husbands? And we spent a lot of time on this a few months back. What should a wife call her husband?
Lord.
Calling him Lord. Is that a way to manifest your sacredness? If your attitude and demeanor is that your husband is your Lord? That's how the godly woman of old manifested their faith in God. So you can't sever that. You can't separate that. If a woman is not in this kind of an attitude toward her own husband, then she is not preeminently sacred because she's setting aside one of the biggest parts of what it is to be a godly woman. Kelly?
I was going to draw on that point and draw the contrast that Paul makes. He talks about the qualifications of widows who can be taken into the number. He talks about refusing the younger widows, you know, because after they have, you know, cast off their first faith, they begin to be wanton and desire to marry. But he warns that these younger women often will learn to be idle, wandering from house to house, being busybodies and gossips. And that's in very good contrast because they'll be speaking evil of other people. The godly woman respects her husband. You know, the godly man loves his wife. These are qualities that are characteristic. You know, you should not hear, even every marriage has challenges. It doesn't matter how long they've been married or how
right.
short a time they've been married. But the godly woman, and this goes with the man too, not just the woman, but she doesn't air that out in terms of showing, well, you know, my husband doesn't do this or doesn't do that. She always shows proper respect for her husband. I think that's the real containment of how, you know, I'm sure Sarah had some disagreements with her husband.
Right.
But she still respected him as the head of her home and as the position that God had put her in. You know, it's just like an employer. We might have an employer that's difficult to work with, maybe even unreasonable. You know, as Peter talked about in 1 Peter 2:18, we still are to obey our masters according to the flesh.
Right. Yeah, and just to comment a little more on that, in Proverbs 31, the law of kindness is on her tongue, and toward her husband, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. So, did you mention Abigail? Is that who you just mentioned? I was going to talk about Abigail a little bit, but I wasn't sure. I blitzed when you said about... Anyway, Abigail was married to Nabal. Was Nabal a pretty interesting character?
Yeah.
He was a terrible person. But when Abigail gets to David, she doesn't badmouth Nabal. She says, it's all my fault, and let it be on me, and here's what I want to do to fix it. Now, was it her fault? But if you've got a problem, I mean, you're one, right? If a husband's doing something foolish, and what's the wife going to do? Oh, my husband, you just don't even know. Or does she just take responsibility for it and not even go into the details of why? And that's really all we have. We have Abigail, and we have the worthy woman, and then we have the prostitute or the woman dressed as a harlot, and then we have the woman who is conspicuously sacred in her demeanor. And you have to look at the scripture and say, well, what does that mean? I mean, how can I as a woman be sacred? And the answers are doing the things that God has said to do. Well, what does God say for women to do? And that's it. Modest apparel. I permit not a woman to teach or have dominion over a man. If a woman is sacred, what's she going to do with that verse?
Respect it.
Put it up on a pedestal. If she sees that a meek and quiet spirit is of great price in the sight of God, then if she wants to be conspicuously sacred, she's going to put that on a pedestal. And this is what the church has the right to see in its older women. And again, this is not something that you're going to see a tiny little bit of it in the assembly, but most of the time this is going to be seen in conversations and in as life unfolds. I mean, every husband does something foolish once in their life, right? Maybe just once. No, I think we do a lot of foolish things, and we need a wife who will cover for us, not a wife who's going to emblazon it abroad. Here's another example of my husband. Is that conspicuously sacred?
No.
Did I see another hand? Carl?
Didn't even take into consideration Dorcas and Priscilla and Phoebe and women of that nature.
Yeah, you get little glimmers. Yeah. You get little glimmers. Mm-hmm. But as I said, I mean, I spent a lot of time on this yesterday just trying to figure out, okay, how would a woman do that? And again, I think we're finished with this now, so I'm going to move along. But this is something that we have a lot of older women in the class right now. And so you have this mandate. If you want to manifest good works, then this is your mandate to be conspicuously sacred. And, of course, you're going to have to work out your own salvation. I've just given you some ideas on how you would do that. Kelly?
Yeah. I was just going to point out one thing. I didn't take away your point, I think, from Abigail in general, probably about her. She did say to David in 1 Samuel 25:25, she said to him, "Please let not my lord regard this scoundrel Nabal, for so his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him." Maybe she shouldn't have said that, you know.
That's the problem. Rahab lied too, yeah. So yeah.
So,
but that's a good point.
Maybe she shouldn't have said that, you know, to David. But I think what she was pointing out to him was, in this context, look. Don't avenge yourself. Don't let this man tempt you into doing something wrong because of this man's character. You know?
Right.
Don't let this be sin or reproach to you because of what he's done. But I think she still even showed respect for her husband. He was drinking the next night, and she waited until the next morning when his merriment had left him, and then informed him, "You came about that close to being wiped out."
That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right, so then we move to slanderer, which is often used in the scriptures. Matter of fact, mostly it's used in the scriptures of Satan. This is the word diabolos, which we get the word devil from. And it means to speak evil of someone. This is slanderer is not bringing bad information that's true. It's what? Bad information that's not true. Because if you're going to be taken to court for slander and you can prove it's true, what will they do? They throw it out. I mean, you may not like it, but it's true. It's not slander. Slander requires that something not be true. Virgil?
Yeah, Bill Bergen Standard uses the term malicious gossips.
Okay, malicious, yeah. Because in the word malicious, what you have, again, is this concept. And again, it's just the difference in Greek versus English. In English, malicious gossips would take in a little bit more than just speaking terrible things that aren't true. But In this particular context, that's what the word actually means. I don't think we'd be far wrong to take it a little bit broader, because how many times in the Proverbs does it talk about people who are gossips and they say things that separate intimate friends? And but a lot of times, even if somebody says something, there's a good way to portray it and a bad way to portray it, right? So that's what we're looking at. Okay, Rob, and then did I see him back there too? Okay, Ray, after Rob, and then Kelly. Oh, and Carl too. First, did you have your hand up? Okay, it must have been Charles.
Well, there are some things that are true that should not be
Charles,
said.
Rob. Sorry. Go ahead. I'm having a meltdown here.
There's some things that may be true, but they should not be said.
That's true. That's true. And that's what gossip generally means. And that's a different word that we'll be dealing with a little bit later. Okay, Ray?
I don't know if I didn't hear it correctly, but you used the word accuser or accusations, false accusations?
Yes, false accusations.
Being an accuser of things that aren't there, you know, whatever your imagination can lead a person to think something wrong about somebody.
Right.
Accusation is not. I don't know if you used that word.
No. Think about the devil. The first time he talks to Eve, how does he portray God to her? Yeah, he doesn't want you to have something. Is that slander? Yeah, that's absolute slander. Kelly, you had a point?
Yeah, I was, in looking at these, I know you'll get to these probably in more detail. When whatever the older woman is teaching the younger woman is something that she will have herself. So even though the word discreet is not mentioned in this list for the older woman, she's going to teach the younger woman to be discreet. She herself would be discreet. I brought this up in relationship to slander. We should not ever say things about anyone, but particularly our brethren, that are untrue. At the same time, like Carl was saying, knowing when to say something, you know, having the discretion that while you may have information, you know not to bring this up in this context because it could be hurtful,
right.
It could be damaging, even though it is true. And that's, I think that's part of the discretion in the mouth of kindness. That's sort of a two-pronged characteristic,
right.
Discretion and not slander.
Yeah, and if somebody repents of something and you continue to talk about it, isn't that slander? I mean, they've been forgiven, and you can't let it go. You just got to continue to bring it up. And God's already forgiven them. So if God forgives me of something and somebody continues to use it as a false accusation or as an accusation, at some point, what do we have to do? Now, this isn't true. This was true. He repented. We don't need to hear about it anymore. Okay, so slanderers, not given to much wine. You know, it makes you wonder what kind of culture they lived in, because this is mentioned so many times in the scriptures. The elders should not be given to much wine. This one's a little different because it's more a slave. There's the Greek word slave is actually in here, not a slave to wine. Now, who would we call today someone who's enslaved to wine? Okay, an alcoholic, right? An alcoholic would be someone who is a slave to wine. But I don't think that takes it far enough, because in our culture, and especially in the church, any use of wine is, in the attitude and disposition that we have toward wine, if I still drink wine, what does that tell you about my relationship to wine? Isn't it a little bit of a servant of wine?
Yes.
Because if I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want to touch it. Am I a slave to it? Am I a servant of wine anyway? But if I've got to have it, I run out to the grocery store, I wear my sack over my head, and I run in there, and I get four or five, and then I run home and make sure nobody sees it, and I have to drink it. I'm not an alcoholic, but would you say I'd be slave to wine?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So this particular term, you know, don't get the idea, well, as long as I'm not addicted to it. No, in our culture, you're going to ruin your reputation. I've got a bottle in my home of red wine vinegar that looks like a wine bottle, and I felt so bad buying it because it's vinegar. I mean, is there anything wrong with buying vinegar?
No.
But the bottle looked like something that I was just looking around, man, hoping we buy this stuff. And I told Jeannie the other day, I'm going to pour this into another bottle, because Jack was over one day, and I said, I had to tell him, look, that's vinegar. It's not. But, you know, because that's where culture is, and you don't want anybody to think you even touch it, because we don't want to have any relationship with it. Carl?
And we've got principles from the Old Testament, that Proverbs 20, that wine is a mocker. And it has to do with your influence and reputation.
Right.
In our society.
Yeah. No, that's right. Kelly?
Sometimes people get confused about this idea of given to much wine. You know, you brought this out. In 1 Peter chapter 4, when he makes the statement about, you know, how we have been converted to Christ and to not put on those fleshly things, he says in verse 4, in regard to these, they think it strange that you not run with them in the same flood of dissipation. You know, he's not saying Christians can run in a little dissipation, just don't run in the flood of dissipation.
Right.
He's saying that the world is caught up in the flood, and as Christians, we shouldn't be in that. Same thing with drinking.
Right.
He's not saying it's okay to drink a little. He's saying the world is given to alcoholism. Don't be given to that.
Right. Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, we've used this illustration so many times. Why do I care whether somebody sees a bottle of wine in my shopping cart? Whether it's my next-door neighbor or a brother in Christ. Why am I afraid they might see it?
Because they know what society is definition
right.
of that.
There's a stigma, right?
Yes.
There
yes.
is a stigma, even among worldly people who, and I don't know, maybe that's not so much true anymore, but I know it was for many, many years, that if a Christian had alcohol, that was viewed with a stigma.
Yeah.
Virgil?
For as long as I can remember, in different congregations that Martha and I've been involved with, there's always been, at some point, someone within the congregation that thought it was okay to drink. Just the way life has been. And it has grown into, I consider, a pretty big issue within the Lord's Church today. And we identify it as social drinking. And when we hear elders and preachers defend that, there's something wrong here. And we've slackened so much that we've become like the people of the world. And we attribute, well, wine isn't going to take a boss because the scripture's full of wine. People don't pay attention to these words and the context that they're used in.
Right. Yeah.
And any Christian should be able to do that, to determine whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. People of the world, they're a different category in the sense of knowledge of the scriptures. But as far as Christians are concerned, it's without excuse. Once they've learned that it's wrong to drink, anyway, I'll just leave it at that. It is an issue in the church.
Well, unfortunately, you're right. So is casinos. I mean, people eating at casinos. I mean, they think, oh, it's such good food there. Well, what are you doing there? You know, there's a lot better places to go out.
Another problem, Alan, is when we continue on with this in the church, our children that are members, or their children of members of these congregations, they grow up thinking that it's not wrong. That it's okay.
Right.
As long as you don't get drunk.
Kelly, then Charles.
I was going to just comment on that. I think, you know, to your points you made earlier, Alan, much of the religious people that I've talked with, they don't see any problem with social media. I mean, I'm not talking about Christians. I'm talking about members. And,
right.
You know,
and that's what the world has done.
Yeah.
You know, the moral creep that we've seen.
And I think maybe to Virgil's point, maybe as Christians, on some level, we haven't done a good enough job of explaining to them how the scriptures portray strong drink,
right,
and why we don't partake. It's not going to convince people to just tell them drinking's wrong. We're going to have to show them from God's word how alcohol is portrayed and why we don't imbibe in that. You know, what God says about sobriety, walking in the day, and other characteristics of the Christian. And
sure.
That's how we're going to show them what God's word characterizes.
But back to our initial point, which is if somebody doesn't want to be taught, you know, you can show them. You can show people why you need to be baptized. Proving baptism is a lot easier than proving social drinking. And how do we do with that one? So it's a problem. I don't preach on it every week, but I do preach on it every year or two because I think it is a critical thing that we need to deal with. Unfortunately, and Virgil's right, every congregation I've ever been in, there have been closet drinkers. You know they're there, but they don't tell you who they are. and you don't know who they are. There's rumors, you know, I saw so-and-so come out of a bar. Well, let's go talk to him. Oh, no, you can't use my name. Well, what do we do now? You know, if you can't use their name, you're kind of... Anyway, let's move along here. Let's see. I'm sorry, Charles?
Yeah, also along the same lines, it's getting to a point, and it has gotten to a point now where this medical marijuana is also going to be a situation, and as Christians, you know, and especially young Christians, whenever situations come up, you know, and as I said, they're using this as an excuse to get whatever it is that they're the problem that they're having here. In other words, it's all right to do that. And it's really, it's not okay, you know, to do that right there. But it's the same, along the same line as far as the drinking part right there.
Right.
You know, if you have a problem right here, the medical marijuana, because they want to use this as like it's a social, like it is with social drinking or whatever, you know. Right.
You're talking about legalized marijuana.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
right.
This thing right here too.
Yeah.
And it gets to a point right there where you're not really you know sure about what you're to do as far as a Christian if you're not taught that these things are wrong right here. In other words, if you can't get whatever it is that's happening with you taken care of without going to that right there,
right.
Then you need to leave it alone. You're not just supposed to get into it. The other thing that's going to take you away
right.
to another way of thinking.
That's right. Prescription, drug abuse, legalized marijuana, these are problems. I think they fit very handily under the such like in Galatians chapter 5. And, they're apple and orange. You know, you smoke marijuana, you get drunk. There's a slight difference, but they both do the same thing to the brain, right? They both destroy inhibition and they both... cause us to be very dangerous behind the wheel. Okay, let's try to finish up the younger or older women. I guess we're going to get to the younger women today, but let's go ahead and talk a little bit about teachers of good things. Now, here again, we have a word that's only used once in the New Testament, and it's so generic that when you try to figure out, okay, what exactly does it mean, teachers of good things? I mean, anything in the Bible, is it a good thing? So is this a superfluous statement, teachers of good things? I mean, clearly, if she's teaching error, then she's not going to be a godly, devout woman. But there's got to be something more in this teachers of good things that we want to kind of draw out. Kelly?
I'd say, too, you know, just like when we look to men to serve as elders, they're sober-minded men, not sober in the inebriated sense, but sober in terms of seriousness. You know, I've seen it happen time and again. I think we all have. We get in the company of Christians, and I'll use this phrase, worldly talk takes over. We're not using foul language necessarily, but we're no longer really thinking in a spiritual sphere, if that makes sense. And so we kind of transition from the spiritual to the worldly. That's the conversation.
Right.
I think the characteristic of this woman is she's always spiritual in her outlook and in her mentality. If she's going through a difficulty in her life, maybe her husband's passed away, maybe she's having a health issue of some kind, she doesn't look at that in a way that complains or in a way that is going to be like what worldly people would do, or maybe even some Christians who are not spiritually minded, but she's a teacher of good things. She used that as an opportunity to instruct about perseverance and about submitting to God and being faithful and those kind of things.
Right.
That's how I kind of...
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. When we're in conversation, and of course, we're not going to always be talking about spiritual things. I mean, when we're talking about a football game that was real exciting, is that, you know, but there's a line there. I could have just died. Is that any way for a Christian to talk? You know, let's cancel services on Sunday so we can watch the Super Bowl. Now, are we spiritual anymore? See, that's not spiritual. That's not a good thing. So... and I think that levity often is one of the most dangerous things. We want to say something funny, and oftentimes it's cutting, or it verges on worldliness. And so these are things that you have to be very careful of. And a point that was made earlier, everything somebody does is teaching, right? So I remember one time somebody Somebody talked about, I'd rather see a sermon than hear one.
Yes.
Or one time I got really hammered. A woman in a congregation, she was angry with me. She said, "The thunder of your behavior drowns out your words. I can't hear you." And I'm going, "Well, what did I do?" "Well, you just..." But that, is there some truth to that? I mean, if you see me out drinking and I'm up here preaching against drinking, what does the thunder of my activity do to my words? Yeah, they're hypocrisy. So a woman needs to be very careful about what she's teaching by her jewelry, what she's teaching by her clothing, what she's teaching by her conversations, her activities, but clearly, since this is actually the word for imparting knowledge, it's also going to have to do with everything that comes out of her mouth. Did I see a hand over here, Carl?
I was going to say, in the olden days, the elders didn't call before they come. They didn't knock on the door. You didn't know it was coming.
Right. Yeah, that was before telephones, right? Kind of hard to call before you're coming when they live 5 miles away and there's no phone. Kelly?
I was going to say something, too, about this. Is, we could delve on this topic, so I'm not going to just spend a lot of time on it, but the idea of social media, Facebook, Twitter, and I've cautioned Christians about this. You know, the kind of things that you reference or like or share, are you sharing something that is blatant immodesty? I remember seeing a Christian sharing a video by a girl named Megan Trainor. I don't know if any of you know who she is, but she's a young pop, young woman pop star, but she's very immoral. She uses foul language in her music. And a Christian referenced a video that was referencing one of her songs.
Right.
Without, you know, it's just like, you got to know what you're doing. And like you were saying, you are teaching through that. Because if I go and click on your reference or your post or your like, and I go and see what you're actually liking, and that's immoral or immodest or ungodly, that is reflecting on
right.
on you. Either you were not diligent or you were, you know, whatever. But we have to be careful about that kind of thing. I think in social media sometimes we get real careless. We can be careless.
Yeah, I don't use social media, so I never see it, but people tell me sometimes that people are putting pictures of their vacation and your mouth drops open when you see what they're wearing on vacation. I mean, they're not even thinking that, you know, here I am wearing a bikini on vacation and now the whole world can see I wear bikinis. I mean, now, should she wear the bikini? Obviously not, but it tells you something when somebody can wear that and then post it. What does that tell you about their conscience, their feelings? They're not even ashamed. And people talk about their movies or songs. They like something that has one good point in it, and the rest of it's just pure garbage. I had to get on to my son one time. He sent me something. I said, "What in the world are you sending me this for?" He said, "Oh, no, Dad, that wasn't." And I said, "Well, okay, but it came." Carl?
You know, sometimes Christians don't think deep enough. For instance, I don't send out cards that says Merry Christmas. We don't practice Christmas. I send out cards that says Happy Holidays or Happy New Year, because Christians does not have anything to do with Christmas.
Right. Yeah. So,
but sometimes people just don't think.
That's true, and we've gone a long way out on the teaching good things, but I think we've covered some good information. All right, we'll go ahead and start on next week. I tell you, we're just one verse a week. We're really moving out here. We're gonna be 90 before we finish Titus at the rate we're going.
2 years to get through Proverbs.
Well, that's all right. I'm not complaining. I guess I'm being apologetic. It's not that I don't want to study and I don't want to put the time in. These passages are rich, and next week's is going to be very rich. We're going to have to spend some time on it. So, okay, appreciate your time. Thank you. Any comments?